My name is Brian Breese, and I'm 50 years old. Today is Tuesday, December 19th, 2017, and I'm speaking with Debbie Foss, who has a long 30-year relationship with me. And we are recording this interview in De Pere, Wisconsin, on the campus of St. Robert College.
Yes, I am Debbie Foss, and I have been at St. Norbert College for 34 years. I am 63 years old, and 63 of those years I have been continually grateful for being alive.
So the Breese family and the Foss family were first introduced. The genesis of our relationship goes back to 1986. When I and my now wife, Carol, were first-year students at St. Norbert College, and my advisor was Dr. Tom Foss, professor of sociology at St. Norbert College, Debbie Foss's beloved spouse, and Tom has since deceased, but that's how our relationship began. And so, Debbie, maybe you could say a little bit about how you got to St. Norbert College and what St. Norbert College means to you.
My husband and I were natives of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Tom used to teach at Marquette University and made a change in his life, married me, and we both took jobs at St. Norbert College. What does St. Norbert mean to me and to my family? Those would be pretty hard for me to separate. It's almost impossible to say that those are two different things. In my life and in my family's life, St. Norbert has been embedded into us. Tom and I began our professional career in De Pere, Wisconsin. However, our children were baptized at the college, and they received First Communion and all their sacraments. One of my children completed their undergraduate degree here. And so we have been here. This place is part of us. We come here when we need strength. We come here when we want to express our gratitude. I find it interesting that my children, who live now all over the world, when they return to De Pere, Wisconsin to visit their mom, it is not a long time after they are home that they come back to the college. And they walk the college, they walk the campus, and they sit on their dad's bench, and they go to the fourth floor and touch the door of his office. And they make a stop on second floor where my office is. And they end up typically in Old St. Joe's Church for some quiet meditation. I think there is a spirit here that lives in all of them. So St. Norbert is embedded into our lives. And it owns a piece of each of our hearts.
Well, as you're telling that story, Debbie, I'm thinking in my own, we haven't even talked about this, but so my story at St. Norbert began in 86, and all these years later, here now I've returned. The listeners should know that I'm now the president of St. Norbert College. But one of the things that you said, Deb, that was interesting is how the college is a part of your family. And the same is true for us, because Carol and I met here, got married here, had our wedding vows renewed here. And just now, returning to the college, our kids, now 21 and 17, just 6 months of kind of being reacquainted to the college, already feel like the college and the peers' home. So there's something about the college that draws people into it and gives it a sense of purpose. Maybe you could reflect on what is one or two things about the college that you think has that kind of effect on people and families. What's one or two things that comes to mind?
I can tell you that 34 years ago when I walked this campus for the first time, there is a feeling of warmth and a feeling of welcome. And it doesn't matter if I'm walking into a building or if I'm standing on a particular blade of grass. There is something there that tells me I belong and that I have the right to be here and I have the right to experience life in this setting. I think that our students feel that. I think it's a place where they are allowed to discover who they are through deep conversation, to professors in a particular class, just walking the river sometimes. I think in the late night discussions in their dorm rooms, it is time to discover and to find out, who am I, who will I be, who do I want to be, where will I find hope? I think there is that feeling on this campus because it's small and people know, they know each other very well.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's values from the Norbertines or being a Catholic liberal arts institution that plays itself out in day-to-day life. And, you know, one of the things I want to transition a little bit here, when we're talking about the way a college or an institution can impact families and relationships, one of the things that is very present in my mind right now is that Tom, your beloved life partner, spoke so eloquently about the intersection of human potential and a vocation, a calling to what you do, the teaching and love. So if we could think for a minute about that, all those conversations that you had with Tom, one of the things that I take away from my time at St. Norbert, particularly with Tom, is him talking about vocation, what it means to really be called to something, what it means to really do that in a loving way, and what it means to be a part of a larger community, St. Norbert we call communal. A little bit about what is this work that you've been doing for these years at the college. Talk a little bit about in those vocational terms and what it's meant to you as you've seen yourself as a professor evolve over time and as a mother and as a parent.
I think I have been so fortunate to have found my calling. From being a young child, I always wanted to work in the field of education. Because I thought, as one person, that is a way that I can change the world. And so being a classroom teacher, I knew that maybe someday I could influence 25 children. And then from that, I became a principal, and now I could influence possibly 250 families. And then we moved to St. Norbert, and I thought, oh my goodness, I can now not only just do 25 children, but 25 teachers can change the world if we have deep conversation about being a servant. And I think that I have instilled that in my children and in the people that I meet, that there is so much to give back, that we hold gifts that have to be unfolded, and we have to just trust in the process. And I think being part of the education department, it has been a blessing, because I have seen students when they just come into the college, and I also work with them as seniors. So I have the opportunity to see them really come to fruition with, I'm actually going to be a teacher. And they make choices on what kind of teacher they want to be, all because of discussion that they have had with other people and witnessing good models. I think vocation is a matter of finding the world's greatest needs. And how do you fit into that? And I think sometimes in this world, it is not filled with optimism. And I'm hoping that the greatest gift I can give students and people I meet is that life is good, and it throws curves at us that we're not ever ready for. But if you let faith enter into it and believe that there is reasons for everything, you will go in the right direction. You just have to believe in the process and life, let life unfold.
So you were in this thing called higher education, but we're also parents. We hold those, you and I hold those things in common. And part of what I have learned is that there's actually not a lot different in terms of those roles, because we're really talking about helping either our own kids or our students at different stages of life kind of see what their place is in the world. And you mentioned some of the challenges we face right now in this world. And I want to maybe pick at that a little bit to say we are faced with all sorts of challenges around the political arena, societal issues around race and discrimination, and really inflammatory type public narrative. And so it seems to me that this work we're doing of education and nurturing young kids and college-age students to find their place in the world and to feel a real explicit connection to the common good and giving back. When you think about giving advice to maybe now your own kids as parents, or as you think about college students, let's start with kids. What advice would you have for your son Noah, who has beautiful young family, when he now, or your daughters, are thinking about bringing young kids into this world and teaching them how to navigate what the world presents? What advice might you have for young parents?
I would, and I do consistently, tell them to slow down. I think we live in a fast-paced world, and people are being called in and stretched in every direction. And how do you place priorities? And do you place priorities? Do you allow yourself to say, no, I can't do this right now? And I think if we don't slow down and look at the person sitting next to us and realize that they are a gift and they are full of goodness, time passes by. And I can witness that life can be short, sometimes unexpectedly short. And yet, do we live our life so that we have no regrets?
Do
we take time? Do we take time to read a book? Do we take time to read to our children? Do we take time with our parents and with our siblings and our friends? Or are we pulled in directions that, in the end, will it matter? And I think if we live our lives, in the end, will it matter? And we let that guide us, maybe we will slow down. It's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing for somebody 60 years old to do. But imagine, you know, I've been through a longer career than somebody who's 20. So they keep working at it and working at it. But I think it's really important to slow down.
I mentioned your kids. Could you describe for the listeners, tell us the story of your children, and maybe there's another generation you might mention too.
I have three children, and my oldest is 33, Noah, who is married and has three girls of his own, 5, 3, and 1, and another child on the way, who have in April decided to pick up and move to Switzerland.
Wow.
And they are living there. He took a new job, and it was interesting because Noah is very much like his father, who has a very charismatic personality, and he loves challenges, but his gift lies in his personality, and he was doing a job where his mind was challenged, but not necessarily his personality. So for some time I was praying, dear God, please let him find a job that will really use Noah's gifts. And then last year, this particular company came to Noah, and I didn't realize it was in Switzerland. And as time went on, he said, don't worry about this, Mom. There's a 1% chance it's going to happen. And as time went on, now it's 10%. Now it's 50. Oh, Mom, there's a 90% chance I'm going to have this job.
This is going to happen.
This is going to happen. And then after he signed the contract and they decided to move, I told him about my prayer. And he said, be careful what you pray for, Mom. Because I did not say, could it be in the Midwest?
Right, right, yeah. However, you could have been more specific in your prayer life.
I learned to be more specific. He is wonderful. And if anybody should be the father of three daughters, it should be my son, who is wonderful with them.
Yeah.
And then I have a daughter who is 31 years old, who is a teacher here in De Pere. She taught in the middle school, started in the elementary school, moved to middle school. She is currently in her PhD program in urban ed and would someday love to be back here on this campus if that's what God has in mind for her. She is a woman in her own right, and she gives and serves the community sometime at the expense of taking care of herself. So her goal is to take care of herself a little bit more because she thrives on taking care of others. And then my third child is currently living in Chicago, Illinois, and she is a communication major who works in a very big company in the business world. She is
great combination of her father and her mother.
Mm-hmm.
My middle child would be the would be more like me. So Morgan, our middle child, would be a combination of both of us. She is charismatic and very tender-hearted.
Mm-hmm.
And she too will change the world.
Yeah.
Our wish.
Yeah. What a gift it's been, a blessing to have Noah, Chelsea, Morgan, each in their own way, finding their way. And so as you think about your students that you've had, and of course, your kids are not older than college age, but what kind of advice would you have for the college age students that you've worked with over the years? As you think about the way your own children have made their way into adulthood, what one or two things come to mind when you think about today's college students, just a half a generation behind your own kids?
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have for them as they face the educational opportunities they have at the college and their own life choices?
I think they should never underestimate their abilities. My children laugh because they probably were brought up with the statement, you can do anything in this world except drugs. And they will bring that back to me all the time, because sometimes I find my children doing things that I would never do. And I the other day I said, what gives you the courage to do this?
Yeah.
And Chelsea looked at me and said, I can't believe you can ask that question, Mom. We were brought up by hearing it at least daily. We can do anything in this world except drugs. And so I would tell this future generation, don't underestimate your ability.
Mm.
And if somebody tells you you're not ready to try that, but you think you are, go for it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, failure is only in your head.
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't try it, you may never have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a whole world out there that needs to be saved. Mm-hmm. You need to change the world.
Mm-hmm.
As my mother told me, my job is to change the world. Your job is to change the world and to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And to live with the values that your parents gave you.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that you may have rolled your eyes at them when you were in middle school, but they weren't so off.
Yeah.
And that you should listen and follow your heart.
Yeah.
But don't underestimate what you can do.
Yeah. So the potential that our students and our own children have is unlimited, and the opportunities are immense. So how many years have you been a faculty member now since 19?
This is my 34th year.
34th year. All those years of teaching and guiding students, what's the one or two things maybe that you're most proud of in that time that you've been at St. Norbert as a faculty member?
I think I am most proud of the fact that when students come into my office with questions or concerns or decisions that they need to make, somehow I have the ability to lay out the pros and cons,
mm-hmm.
and to empower them enough to leave my office with a smile on their face saying, okay, I have a plan. Okay, I can try this.
Mm-hmm.
A part of my job is problem solving. I problem solve in the larger community of Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've learned to be a listener, and I've learned to help people repeat to them what they have said to me and to see their gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people want to be very dependent and want others to make their decision. And to empower a student is more valuable than ever telling them how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the gifts that I give to my students.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I model to them, it is great to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that both male and females can have a professional life, and can have a spouse if they choose, and can be parents if they choose.
Mm-hmm.
And that those things don't need to be separate.
Yeah.
That if you learn to live a balanced life,
mm-hmm.
and to place the right priorities, life will be full,
mm-hmm.
and it will be good.
Yeah, wow. When you consider the college in these 34 years and all the changes that have happened, mm-hmm. Talking here with the freshly minted new president of the college, an alum, and our listeners, what one or two things that do you hope most for the college and its future? What are the kinds of things that, when you think about that 34-year run and all the success the college has had, what's next for this college?
I think there are many ways that the college has changed in 34 years,
mm-hmm.
and there are ways that it has stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the best ways, some of the best things that have happened on this college happened 34 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the sense of feeling that you belong,
mm-hmm.
feeling that you can experience life and you can make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is through communicating with others. It is about relationships. All those things happened for the last 34 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if I look at how have we changed? Yes, we have grown in buildings and we've grown in landscape,
mm-hmm.
but the college, in my definition, would be the people that live on this,
mm-hmm.
on this acre or two of land.
Mm-hmm.
And has that changed? I would say 34 years ago, and so I'm leading to the question of what do I hope continues?
Mm-hmm.
34 years ago, the population of our students was not as effective a representation of the world as today. And today I see we have a much better representation of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an increase in our international students, and we have an increase in our students of color,
mm-hmm.
and we have an increase in our population of LGBT.
Mm-hmm.
We are teaching our students about integrity,
mm-hmm.
and truthfulness and kindness. And so if there's anything that I wish this college continues to do is continue to look and represent what the world looks like.
Yeah.
Because if they live in a healthy environment on this campus with a good representation of the world, they will have hope that they, when they leave us, they will take that to a much larger community.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope continues on for another 35 years.
Yeah.
That we just get better at that.
Yeah. The way, as you're talking about these values and the ways in which we've lived them, for me, it's also part of our mission of being a Catholic and liberal arts and Norbertine place. So in a sense, it's about ways of finding more, even deeper and richer ways and more consistent ways to live out that educational purpose and mission. And of course, that's the great hope of the college, that we can find our way. It's 119 years this year. So how do we find that in more... Maybe a couple of different questions. What are some of the quirky things about the college? Things that you're like, yeah, this is only happening at St. Robert College. Rituals, the way we interact, the things that we do. What makes it unique?
I think what makes it unique, I think there are moments. There are moments that I don't always lock things. I don't lock my office.
Yeah.
I leave my office door open. And I think students come in whenever they want to come in, and there's always time for people. I think what's unique about this institution is people make time for each other.
Mm.
I think we know staff, we know faculty, we know facilities, we know the president, we know people in Main Hall.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we have the ability to, because it's a small institution, people know people, and people know stories. I think it was very evident when we had the funeral of my husband on this campus.
Mm-hmm.
The people who came out and people who knew Tom and had stories about Tom,
mm-hmm.
it filled me and told me I am not alone on this campus.
Yeah, yeah.
And that the mourning process was not just about Debbie, but it was about many people on this campus who missed somebody.
Yeah.
Made me proud to think that I was married to a man who had such great influence on many people.
Yeah.
And I think that's different. I don't think you find that everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that parking is quirky because that hasn't changed. We cannot find parking on this campus.
I'm convinced every college in America is a parking problem.
But it's good for us because then we exercise and walk and get our steps in.
Yeah.
I think common prayer is another thing that doesn't happen everywhere.
Yeah.
The institution values quiet time for people in a busy world. Even if it's just quiet in your office, it's mm-hmm. not that you have to go anywhere, just be quiet for 15 minutes out of the day.
Yeah.
I think that's a gift.
Yeah. One of the things as you're talking about this community, the idea of ritual and tradition and things that make it special, that, of course, is for our listeners, my wife, Carol, who's a 1990 graduate and has a master's and a doctorate in interpersonal communication and is, I don't know if you know this, Debbie, but just yesterday she found out that she received faculty emeritus status at the University of St. Thomas, but her area of research is marriage and family. And one of the things she studies is the way ritual or tradition can contribute to the happiness and longevity and the health of relationships. And so maybe that's part of what we're experiencing, is a college that maybe does that pretty well. So the question I want to put on the table for both of us is, one of the things I remember a lot about Tom, and I remember it a lot in the marriage and family course, talking about family ritual and family traditions to build strength and stability in family and to build relationship love and commitment and endurance and satisfaction. Maybe we could transition a little bit and talk about our own relationships with Tom and others and our families and how we've lived that kind of a relationships with ritual and tradition.
Yep. I think I'm at a wonderful time in my life for all of you listeners who are 20 years younger than me and just starting out with your children, that when your children get to be 30 years old, maybe 25, it is a great assessment for what kind of a parent you are. Because I think up until about 20, 25 years old, sometimes kids still roll their eyes at your traditions and at your rituals when they'd rather be with friends, and you say, no, this is Sunday night and it's game night. And yet, at the age of 25, things start to change because as you visit them, their rituals were rituals that you started at home.
Mm.
And so you sit and go, really? And so we have birthday rituals that you always get breakfast in bed, and you dare not get out of bed if you don't have that breakfast. And we sing the same song all the time.
There you go.
And so we have great birthday rituals and holiday rituals. We have the same kind of food. And sometimes we have outsiders join us, significant others join us, and they just say, so it has to be this way? And all of my children will chime in and say, yes, it has to be this way.
Yeah.
Whether we like it or not, this is the way it is.
Right.
And yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Yeah.
And yes, there is an Easter Bunny. And we don't entertain the thought that there isn't.
Right.
And when we travel on vacation, and sometimes we still try to get everybody in one car, and we travel on vacation, and we know this is a particular food we have all the time. We have meatloaf sandwiches and chips and pickles, and we better have them.
Yeah.
And don't try to change it.
How neat is that we tie these generations together, particularly important because Tom has passed on to the better life, but tying these generations together
mm-hmm.
of you and Tom as parent and now as grandparent and now your own kids as parent, that must be really rewarding to see those kinds of things and the joy that your kids have in those rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you have a lot of moments to see those passing down the generations.
And you wonder if it's genetic or if it really happened because of what we did. Because sometimes I watch Noah with his children and I think, oh my goodness, if that is not your father. And I watch my own daughters doing things, making Christmas cookies just as I make Christmas cookies. And I thought, oh my goodness, is that learned? Is that innate?
Right, yeah.
How did that all happen? The answer to that question isn't even important.
Yeah.
Right. It's more important that it still happens.
Yeah.
And I can go back to my great-grandmother who taught me some of these rituals, and then my mother. And now I taught it to my own kids, and I think they will teach it to their children.
Right.
And what they're teaching is goodness.
Yeah.
And they're teaching a place called home.
Yeah.
So one never feels alone.
Yeah, yeah.
And it happens also in the spiritual world, in their spirituality. I'm amazed
mm-hmm.
that they come home and they want to go to church.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
when something's happening in their life, they will say, Mom, say a prayer for me.
Yeah.
And today through this interview, I got this little text from two of my children who said, praying for you.
Oh.
And I think, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
They may know I'm nervous, but more importantly, they know there is a higher power who is here.
Yeah.
We'll fill in, and you're never alone.
Yeah. Well, the birthday ritual, I want to build on that a little bit. I want you to tell me a little bit more about it and how it plays out in your family. But I want to tell a quick Brees family birthday ritual.
Okay.
You might even know parts of this, but Carol grew up celebrating her family a week of birthday in great fanfare, 7 solid days, right? And in my family, it was a complete opposite, where we were often, my parents were both educators, so we would be, the summers were off for camping, so we'd be out camping, and I would be lucky if on July 2nd I got a mini Snickers bar with a wooden match in it. So to me, I grew up with birthdays being recognized but not celebrated. So one of our marital challenges is trying to, for me to do a better job recognizing a week-long celebration for her. So about 15 years into our relationship, I said to her, you know, this is not going to work. So I want to take my 7 days that I'm supposed to be celebrated, and I want to give them all to you and the kids. I'll just take a mention of my birthday, and then I will work hard to celebrate 10 days for you or 10 days for each of my kids. And since we did that, everything is better in our
really?
In our family. Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So I don't know. Not all family rituals are great. So this is one where we had to negotiate a family ritual. So do you have any negotiated family rituals? Ones that you've, over the years, you've had to modify? You mentioned game night. How does that happen?
Yes, we have game night. And when kids come home.
So when they come home?
Yep, when they come home,
forgiven, huh?
We always know after the children are in bed and at a time when there were no children, we always make popcorn and we bring out the beer and we play cards.
Yeah.
And now when we bring significant others in who are not used to that,
yeah.
Well, that is always a period of adjustment.
Okay.
Do we have mercy on them?
No.
Not very often.
No.
And when my daughter-in-law first came into it, and we would tease her because all of us have been there. They've been brought up with cards, so they have played cards for 20 years. And now somebody comes in who has rarely played cards. Takes them a little bit longer to figure it out, and everybody starts tapping their fingers on the table. And,
yeah.
And we
Let's
don't
get with
have
it.
Mercy on them.
No.
However, to my daughter-in-law's credit, when she comes home now, she is the first person to say, don't forget popcorn.
Yeah.
And don't forget our beer, because even though everybody else would be tired, Heather will say, we have to play cards.
Yeah, she understands the power of it for the family.
She understands the power of it, and she has learned to enjoy it. And she said it doesn't always happen in every family. So
yeah.
If she tries to take it somewhere else, it's not going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about the Fossett tradition of cards.
Yeah.
I am in awe that your family would respect your desire for no celebration.
Oh, it took me 15 years to negotiate that. So I don't know if they respect it or not, but we've done it.
That is just very impressive.
Right.
So your family is more merciful than my family would be.
Maybe just a little bit. Again, it took 15 years to get to that negotiated resolution.
I do want you to know, though, now that I know when your birthday is, I will not have mercy on you.
Okay.
Because for 7 days, you're going to get either a cupcake or a text.
Oh, that's fine. Just know I'm not going to reciprocate.
No, I just want to make more of you.
Yeah,
I want you to know that I am so glad you were born.
You just said something that I want to play off of. Thank you for that, by the way. I'm glad I was born, too. You talked about make more of me. And we'll go all the way back to maybe it was 1987, 1988. I had him like for 5 or 6 classes. And one of the things he introduced to me was the idea of in relationships, particularly marriage, but also friendship, a principal way of thinking about it is to make more of the other, to amplify was the word he used. And in every day, every moment, every minute, our goal is to make more of the other. Talk a little bit about Tom and that idea and the ways in which over the years you saw him or heard him share that idea, because I know he must have shared that with the kids and with you as a way of being in the world. Very other-centered. Maybe say a little bit about that, because I know it's had a long-lasting impact on me and Carol and, of course, our kids, something that we've passed down.
And I would probably say that was one of the greatest gifts Tom gave to myself and to my children.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always easy.
Yeah.
Because
it's hard.
I came from a family that sometimes if you had a bad hair day, they would tell you, you had a bad hair day. And Tom would always say, that's not making more of somebody else.
Yeah.
And he taught us that it is so much more powerful to make somebody feel good about who they are and the decisions that they make than it is to tell them that wasn't a good decision.
Right.
I think that he gave us that gift, and does that mean our children were not allowed to argue with each other? Sometimes, if I was in the house, yes.
Yeah.
If Tom was in the house, not so much.
Yeah.
And so our children learn when is it appropriate, when is not, when is it not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I think I look at my kids and they get along really well because they will call each other to task in a gentle fashion. They won't be as brusque, maybe, as I would have been. I think that, yes, he taught us to make more of one another, and that was the greatest gift he gave. Tom was bigger than life sometimes.
Yeah.
And he, and I want to say this to you now, because I think if he was here sitting in this conversation, there are some things he would want to tell you.
Yeah. What advice would he have for me?
And I think he would tell you, he always looked at challenges and opportunities with a smile on his face.
Yeah.
And he was known for his great big Tom Foss hug.
Yeah.
But I think he knew you better than others, Brian.
Mm.
And he loved you.
Mm.
And I think I am 100% convinced that he is tickled pink in this job.
Yeah.
Not because of his relationship with you,
but
because he knew the man that you are.
Mm.
And I think he knows what St. Norbert needs.
Mm.
And the combination of you and the needs of St. Norbert are exactly where they should be right now.
Well, that's a great compliment. And, you know, you and I could both imagine him saying those words right now. And he is probably, you know, with that wonderful laugh that he would always share, you know that he's really enjoying looking down on us and this conversation and the fact that, you know, life circles kind of circle back around for the Breeses and the Fosses.
I think I want to tell you, though, he would also challenge you because you're in a position that is very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
But he would challenge you to frequent the moments that take your breath away.
Mm. Frequent the moments that would take me. Say more about that.
Frequent the moments that take your breath away.
Yeah.
And to remember those moments, to remember those stories, and to pass them on to your children and to all the youth.
Yeah.
Because I think we need good role models.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget about the moments that take our breath away, that you are so elated.
Mm.
You almost can't breathe because of the gift that you are surrounded by.
Yeah.
And I think children and youth need to know that's what growing old is about.
Yeah.
That's what growing older is about.
Yeah.
They are faced with, I think our youth are faced with tough decisions sometimes, and they see it as failure rather than growth when things don't work out. And I think he would challenge you in your time-consuming job to not forget about the moments that take your breath away.
Yeah. He always had such a wonderful way of talking about, as we said at the outset, vocation and love, but doing it in a holistic, balanced way. And he really did. I remember him challenging us as a class and me individually to remember the moment you're in while you're experiencing it. That kind of idea of, but the way you phrased it was just beautiful, to remember the moments that take your breath away.
And to trust your own instincts.
Yeah.
I think he would say to you, Brian, trust your own instincts. You are in this place, in this moment, for a reason.
Yeah.
People have seen your gifts, and you shouldn't be anybody but Brian Breese.
Mm.
And go with that. Trust it.
Yeah.
Trust the process.
Yeah.
Because I trust you.
Yeah.
And I think I'm speaking his words.
Oh, well, thank you for that. And there's such a rhythm of my memory of Tom and the words you're sharing today and the way that Carol and I have thought of him and you over the years, and it's so joyful for us to be able to come back to St. Norbert College, to see it in such good shape. And one of the real treasures, one of those moments that takes my breath away, is the idea that the Brees and the Foss family can reunite and figure out today and 2017 and beyond what we might be able to, how we might think about a relationship in another 31 years.
Yeah.
Isn't that remarkable how 31 years
holy
ago?
Moly.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary when students will ask me, so how long have you been here? And I used to be able to say, oh, 18 years, not quite as long as you've been alive. And now I say 34, and they all look at me like, you've been here longer than we've been alive.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
try not to
right.
entertain that yeah. conversation.
Right,
I
right,
say,
right,
yes,
right.
right, and I move right on.
Right, right. Well, I want to just say, as we come to the close here, what a joy it's been to for Carol and myself to return to St. Norbert and to reconnect with you and to kind of rethink and rediscuss the ways in which the Foss and the Brees family have its relationship built over the years, and to know, to see what a wonderful gift that you and Tom have given, and now you carry that legacy on with your children, your grandchildren, and for Carol and I to look back in the way that you guys have always been a model for us. The listeners need to know that the Foss family made the Eucharistic bread for our wedding
mm-hmm.
and came to our wedding in 1991,
mm-hmm.
our anniversary, which 26 years.
Just
it was just last week. And so here we are coming full circle. And it's just a privilege to be in this conversation with you. And thank you for sharing so much yourself in this conversation.
I'm in awe that it has come to this full circle.
Yeah.
And I think, would I ever have guessed it? Never.
Right.
Would I even have thought I'd still be here at this time, in this institution, in my second home? Never. And I think, wow, how does that happen? There are
right.
angels and blessings
yeah.
all over the place.
And here we are, a moment that's taken our breath away.
Yeah. yeah.
Let's enjoy it.
Thank you.
So for our listeners, Debbie Foss and Brian Brees, St. Norbert College, be well.
Be well.
Bye.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool.